There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along for another great hour of live local talk. And our friend Dr. John Dindo is joining us here in 1 second. But you'll see what I'm doing. This is going to segue perfectly because this segment brought to you by our friends at Blue Water Yacht Sales and Brokerage going on right now. They're in the business of selling high-end used boats, and that market is red hot. Blue Water's respected in the brokerage network around the country. They market your boat all over the country. Forrest and the crew there know the best market for your boat brand and the right market looking for that. Selling your boat with Blue Water Yacht Sales, you'll get as much money as you would selling it yourself. And this is what Forrest and I talked about. He said, you know, Sean, you sold some boats in the past. I said, yep. He said, how many times do you have to go down to Navco, launch the boat, take them for a ride? How many people coming by? Can I come by Sunday night at 8 o'clock and kick the tires? All that stuff. He said, when you work with them in the brokerage, you're going to get as much as you would selling it yourself, but you don't have to deal with that. You bring it by Blue Water Yacht Sales, you drop it off, they take the pictures, they do the marketing, they know the people that are looking to buy the boat you're selling. So make sure you get the most for your boat without having to take all those trips down to Navco. There's nothing wrong with Navco, but check them out. Blue Water Yacht Sales. You can call them at 476-2699. BlueWaterYachtSales.net is their website. So 476-2699, BlueWaterYachtSales.net. Ask for Forrest and the crew and get top dollar for that boat you're selling. Getting ready to buy another one to head out into the bay and the Gulf. And there's my transition into saying hello to Dr. John Dindo. Good to see you, sir.
Good afternoon. It's great to be here.
It's Dolphin Island Sea Lab. I know we talked about this last year. 50 years.
50 years. 50 years we've been studying our system with great scientists, lots of students from all ages. I think your kids have been there a couple different times.
They have.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved it, their response, because it's something I had done as a child. To see it through their eyes again was fantastic. And I want to talk about this. If people can't tell from your accent, you didn't grow up on Dolphin Island. You're somebody who comes from, well, the Northeast, that studied fish in the Northwest, that decided Alabama was the place to be.
Well, that's true. Although this is really home. This is where this is my home. I've been here 44 years
Amazing.
Now, so I'm not going anywhere. But yeah, I was born in Vermont during the Vietnam era, got drafted, ended up in Alaska, copied Russian code, got out of the service, went to school there, got a degree in fisheries from the University of Alaska. Then I migrated like fish do to the south.
Right. Downstream, not upstream.
That's correct.
And while a heck of a fishery up there, when you start thinking about the Gulf of Mexico,
it's tremendous. Two different habitats, very unique, very special habitats. But the cold weather is, mm-hmm. I don't need to be there anymore. This is where I need to be, right here.
And it's worked for over 4 decades.
That's right.
We're so lucky to have you. A lot of questions on today's show, and I want to get into, some of the newer news that people asked me about just when I mentioned your name was coming on. The redfish kill that was in the south end of the bay. What do we know at this point about that?
You know, it's interesting. Great scientist, Dr. Sean Powers, head of the Marine Science Department at the University of South Alabama, Dr. John Lerter, Dr. Brian DZ at the Sea Lab and at South. They studied the ocean waters. They study the bay. They've got instrumentation out. Dr. Lerter, 2 weeks before the kill started showing up, started getting real low oxygen readings at the lower part of the bay. And that transitioned from what they're suspecting now, that transitioned out into the deeper waters. They've done toxicity studies and all that, and nothing's shown up. It does turn out, Dr. Powers told me the other night, he said that in 2019, in 2021, and this year in 2022, these redfish kills happened offshore, on the big spawners.
Yeah, because that's where the bull reds are going to be at
exactly,
that point.
On the big spawners. And, you know, everybody thought, the scientists all thought, well, these guys shouldn't be dying. I mean, they're big fish. They should be able to handle it.
They could get away from things, right?
But studies from fishery scientists out of Louisiana and Texas have shown that they are very susceptible, because of their high metabolic rate, they're very susceptible to oxygen depletion. And so right now, you know, the belief is that oxygen plays the key role in the loss of these fish.
So there's some kind of phenomenon going on where there's...
some kind of an upwelling offshore that depletes the oxygen in those deeper bottoms, and the fish succumb to it. And it only takes, according to the fishery scientists that they've been studying, it only takes about 2.5 milligrams per liter of oxygen to cause the fish to become lethargic and then die. And we get that a lot, you know, inside the bay. We get that different times of the year. So, but offshore, and you have to remember, these are aggregated schools.
Big schools.
Big schools.
Is it because, Dr. Dinto, is it because that's where those bull reds were that it affected them, and not seeing smaller redfish, for example, or you didn't see any Spanish mackerel, you didn't see any whiting, any white trout? Yeah.
They did, Dr. Power's crew, they sent them out. Scott Banyan's crew, they went out, they picked up dead fish, and there was some differences in class.
Okay.
Yeah, they did. But predominantly, the kill was the bull reds. There were some small ones. There were even some catfish in there, and those guys are really tolerant of low oxygen. So it had to be pretty low. A good question is, and this came up, a good question is, so if 5,000 bull reds died out there and are still washing ashore now on Dolphin Island, you still find them on the west end of Dolphin Island, what percent of the population is that? Uh-huh. Is that 1%? Is it 10%? Is it 50% of the breeding population? Those are the fisheries questions that we don't know.
Right.
We don't have that answer. So, you know, these fishery studies and these scientists that are doing that, critical to the long-term benefit of the fisheries.
And for people to understand that don't follow this, that these are, like you said, the breeding population. These are the biggest of the redfish that move offshore. The earlier year classes are usually associated with in the bay, right?
Or that's the marsh. That's correct. And they're highly reproductive.
They do good at it.
Tremendous amount of eggs.
Right.
Tremendous amount of eggs in them. So that fisheries question is something that, you know, it's not something you can get an easy handle on, obviously.
Right, because you didn't have a census.
Right.
You didn't have a redfish census.
Exactly, I mean, you can go out and you can sample via nets, NOAA and the fisheries department. They go out and sample via, you know, trawls and stuff like that. But that still doesn't give you an idea of what the overall population in the Gulf is. And those are things we need to learn.
What about the, on the mending side of this, you know, I look at it, it's true on land and some species, but you took those 5,000 out. Because there's additional resources or space now, do they repopulate quickly, or does that take forever?
That's a good thinking, good question, and questions that are really not easy to answer. We don't know. Are there another 10,000 out there waiting to come into that one area? Are they moving from the Texas coastline to the Alabama coastline? Good questions. You know, they're not.
Yeah, how much of homebodies are they, or how much are they like a pelagic?
Right.
Are they going back?
Right. From our understanding, is they're really not pelagics like the cobia that move along the shoreline, or tarpon that move along the shoreline. So pretty much they're our species. They're off in those waters, and they stay there until it's time to either move inshore or offshore. So
we right now it's kind of. Y'all are tasked with figuring out how many more are out there, how dire or not this is.
Sure, sure. And that's the key. And the I think what Sean was saying, that fishery scientists a little concerned, is that it did happen in 2020 and 2019, and now
in 2022.
Is there a pattern?
Can you go back and look at what? Because we're going to get into a discussion today of Jubilees, which is a low oxygen event, right?
Absolutely.
But you're going to tell us the formula. Y'all understand the formula, formula for Jubilees.
That's
y'all
right.
Are going to jot this down. But for these redfish, can you go back? Can you and Dr. Powers and others go back and look at those years and say, okay, well, here was what Barry steam plant reading was for salinity, or here's what temperatures were? Is that kind of.
Well, that, it's relatively easy to establish points around the bay where you can monitor salinity, temperature, dissolved oxygen, things like that. A little more difficult when you're out in open water.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, you're out
'cause this is happening.
300 feet of water, 1,000 feet of water.
Do you think it happened? You'll have an idea kind of how far offshore it happened?
I'm not exactly sure.
Okay.
I don't want to say it happened 30 miles or 100 miles because I'm not exactly sure.
Okay.
Guides were the ones that first turned the scientists onto it. They started
seeing
it.
They were sending me pictures when that happened.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's right. So offshore, there are stationary buoys out there that record oxygen, salinity, and temperature and stuff, but they're located in single positions. So one of the things that the Marine Science Department is going to do is they're going to get a glider. And a glider is like an ROV that's self-contained, and you drive it without – it's not tethered. And they'll be able to take measurements. They can drive this thing out into the deep water and get different measurements. That's coming up, next year.
That's fascinating, and hopefully it helps with us figuring out happened.
We'll learn more about the physical dynamics of the Gulf of Mexico off our shoreline.
Because don't you think if we look at fisheries success stories – redfish have to be, if not the hood ornament for this thing, they have to be a runner-up?
As you well know, prior to Paul Prudhomme, nobody even paid attention to redfish, especially bull reds, because they're just big and bony. And
it's a pain.
To get any meat off of them until famous New Orleans chef said, hey, try this.
So blacken these things,
And they became a worldwide hit.
Yes.
So,
but we turned that around. I mean, I tell my children, I said, you know, I'm not going to tell you stories about how the red fishing used to be, because y'all are living in the best time in my lifetime. Because growing up in the 80s, 70s, 80s, it's really the 80s when I started fishing, we didn't have the redfish we have now.
That's correct.
I mean, it's been a success story.
That's correct. And that goes back to people that know how to manage. You know, that's why population studies are so important. You got to understand the population dynamics, fecundity rates. You got to understand aging growth on these species so that you can manage them, not for today, not for tomorrow, but for the future.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wants to get their fair share right now, but we got to plan what's going to happen for our grandchildren.
Well said. Well said. Coming right back, more of our conversation with Dr. John Dindo with the Dolphin Island Sea Lab. Yeah, we're going to get in a discussion of Jubilees. And, you know, a lot of us, I think I was talking to Dr. Dindo before we got started. All of us who grew up around here can probably tell you 2 minutes worth of stuff about Jubilees. And then if somebody comes in and asks an additional question, we might go, well, we don't have an answer to that part of it. Well, this man does. And that's why we'll talk to him about it when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Our guest, Dr. John Dindo with the Dolphin Island Sea Lab. And I do want to get to this Jubilee thing, but still questions coming on the redfish part of this as well. So Jay Bird asking on the text line, could it be tarballs? You know, that comes up like so many times. Anything happens, all of us that love this coast are like, is it the oil spill?
Sure. Right now, the scientists they haven't seen any indication that there's tarballs, a sheen out there, or anything like that. And besides that, you know, tarballs – do get heavy enough to sink to the bottom, but I'm not sure that they would cause a low DO event. You know, it's right now the leading factor is an upwelling in that deeper waters and low oxygen production,
which is like setting us up for our next conversation. Grant says, my biologist friend told me the greatest threat to climate change is the acidification. Thank you. Of the ocean. That's where the world's most oxygen comes from. Not trees, literally algae.
Well, actually, that's a good point. Algae does produce a tremendous amount of oxygen in the world's oceans, but equally and probably more productive is bacteria in the oceans. There are bacteria in the ocean that produce tremendous amount of oxygen. And as you can tell, there's more bacteria in the world than there would be just algae. So that combination...
They're producing O2.
Producing O2, absolutely.
Don says... to ask you if this redfish kill could possibly affect the slot size as well as the creel limit for redfish.
That's a real good question. That's a question for Scott Banyan and marine resource people. They've got good scientists that work there. Their scientists work closely with the scientists at the Sea Lab in South Alabama and to try to analyze this. And again, that's a question of dynamics. How many fish are out there? What percentage of this kill was the overall population? Those are questions that these fishery scientists will continue to look for to try to answer to make sure that we have a fisheries into the future.
All right, I got to start this before the news break here because I got to get the Jubilee discussion going here. First of all, what is the layman's, if somebody says, I'm traveling, they say, y'all got those Jubilees. What is a Jubilee?
What is a Jubilee? Well, if you talk to lots of different people around Mobile Bay, especially on the Eastern Shore, and especially some of the more learned people, they'll give you all kind of explanations on what a Jubilee is. But a Jubilee is an oxygen event. There are two places in the world that naturally occurring Jubilees take place. One of them is Mobile Bay on the Eastern Shore, and the second is a bay in Japan. They are both driven by certain physical parameters that happen in the summer, in our summer months, June, July, August. Hot temperatures, an easterly wind blowing out of the east. That easterly wind tends to move the water off the eastern shore and push it away from the eastern shore. At the same time, water upwells from down low, and it's not oxygen-rich water along that
shoreline.
Low O2. And the other thing that people... I'm not sure they're aware, but as the tide rises in Mobile Bay, it rises along the eastern shore first, runs up the eastern shore to about Middle Bay Light, where it actually starts the mixing process with the river systems that come down. So there's that slug of water's coming in, and it's pushing up, and that easterly wind's pushing the surface waters away. In those shallow waters along the shoreline, all of a sudden, you've got an oxygen depletion. So here you are, a nice little crab, little shrimp. You're a fish swimming around, and all of a sudden, it's starting to get hard to breathe. What do? You run. You run to try to find oxygen.
Right.
Well, you have to imagine. As many that run to the shore for us to enjoy a Jubilee run to deeper water and escape the low oxygen.
So we're only seeing one side of a Jubilee.
You're seeing one. That's not all the fish that exist along that shoreline.
Right.
Some of them turned in the right direction. Some of them turned in the wrong. And not just fish now.
Yes. So many creatures.
Creatures all over. And note that they're not dead when they come up on the shoreline.
Right.
You go and pick them up, but they're still alive.
They're lethargic, but yeah. Okay, when we come back, I want to talk, obviously, more about this. You mentioned the two places, because that's another, beer drinking thing I tell folks. Yeah, it's here and some other place in the world. I found out it's a bay in Japan. I wonder about the geography of that bay in Japan and what it looks like compared to ours. We'll ask that and a whole lot more when we return. Our guest, Dr. John Dindo from the Dolphin Island Sea Lab. We're talking Jubilees.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
You know, I like this text from Doesn't Have Meta, and this is, it's funny, I was saying this the other day, actually earlier today, sitting back in my office about the number of Jubilees I've seen. And, you know, people think, Sean, you're a homeboy, you've seen, but I'm a West Sider, and I've been limited. I have seen, I guess, other than the tail end of a Jubilee when we're launching a boat on the Eastern Shore, I've seen one in my life, right. And I'm about to be 50.
Right.
I've seen a little bit on the West, or heard stories of those at like Alabama Port or whatever on the West Side, but it's an Eastern Shore thing.
It's an Eastern Shore event. My real good friend and yours, Jimbo Metter, 80 years old, born and raised on that Eastern Shore, he told me the other day, he says, yep, he says, one thing I've noticed is there are fewer Jubilees now than when I was a kid. Now, you know, I don't doubt that.
That was like question three here. I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah, I don't doubt that at all.
Why?
It's a good question. I don't know why. Those are pretty deep questions to ask, too. Why do we have less? You know, and someone's going to say, well, it's global warming and the waters are heating up. And
but that would make more, wouldn't it?
You would think. Well,
lead to more of a low O2 event?
You would think, but not necessarily. So.
Okay. And there's so many questions here. I want to get to one I was talking about before we went to the news. And that was do you think it has something to do with the shape of Mobile Bay, why we have the Jubilees?
Yeah.
Why it isn't in Choctahatchee Bay or Pensacola Bay or down Lake Bourne?
It's a combination of things. The actual geography of the bay itself. Mobile Bay is 10 feet deep on average. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the average depth of the bay. And the shape of the bay, wide towards Fort Morgan, channels down, gets more and more narrow as you move north. So that creates a shelf on the eastern side there. All of that plays a role. And then the river flow. You gotta include that river flow, that tremendous river flow that we have coming out. So all of those factors are part of what make this thing.
If one wasn't there, would we have Jubilees?
Probably not. I mean, again, the old-timers, you can say, when's the next Jubilee going to happen?
That's
you know,
right, yeah.
Here's a scientist. I'm going to predict the next Jubilee is going to be July 15th. Well, you know, we can't do that.
But how about day-to-day?
Science can't do that.
How about what can you tell me on a Tuesday that might happen on Wednesday?
That's right. But the people that can tell you a little more about it are those that have lived through it. Like you said, you've experienced one. I've experienced about maybe six or seven of them over there. But the old-timers, the one that look at the weather, that easterly breeze is starting to pick up, you know. The temperature's there. They know that the river flows down. They can tell you that sometime in the next week or so, we're going to have a Jubilee.
Okay, so formula-wise here, from the river flow has to be down?
Yeah, it's a low river flow.
Okay,
it's
so we got the Mobile Tensaw Delta, Mobile River low. We have easterly winds.
Easterly winds.
Blowing out across the bay.
Incoming tide. So basically, that tide's coming in and that water's being pushed off the shoreline. So you got oxygen-rich water coming in, but it's being blown from the easterly wind
going
towards the west.
And you said the replacement, where the water's coming to replace the oxygen-rich water that's going west, is coming from underneath.
Underneath, and that's lower in oxygen and drives that whole system. But it doesn't happen all the time. I mean, as you well know. I mean, and
what about daylight, too? I said, you know, that I've seen the tail end of some in the past. We've showed up right there to put boats in, and then the sun gets up and it kind of goes away.
Yeah, I'm not sure that. I mean.
Do they go on during the day? I mean, it seems to be such a night phenomenon.
I'm sure there are Jubilees that take place and have taken place during the day.
Like, okay.
You know, lots of them, most of the time they take place early in the morning, like you said, you're launching a boat. The other interesting thing is, you know, people say, well, I don't get as many flounder, I don't get as many crabs. Well, now remember, we all got cell phones. You know, 25 years ago, nobody had cell phones.
Right.
And so the Jubilee's taking place, you got a rotary dial phone to call your neighbor and say, hey, I think there's a Jubilee. Today, you got 50 people on a text message. Boom, it's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't need the bell being rung up and down the Eastern Shore. You've got it. You've got it happening through a text message with an accompanying picture of it happening right now.
Exactly.
But the frequency is one question, like you said, Les. And is it that the harvest is more or less, you know, or the number of different creatures? Because we focus on, I like to focus on flounder, shrimp, and crabs.
Sure.
But there's a bunch of different creatures come up in this.
Oh, everything. I mean, anything that can move, any of the organisms that are caught in that low oxygen that have a means of motion move away.
That's why we don't see a bunch of redfish or speckled trout in it?
Right, because they move in much quicker away from it. But, you know, I'm not sure that the numbers of species caught within a Jubilee has changed.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I think you still get your eels and you get your crab, your shrimp, your flounder, you know. Now, as you well know, and as Scott has said, you know, flounder are organisms that were really of concern. We're not finding them.
That's right.
We're not getting them.
That's why the stocking efforts are going on, the closure in November.
Nurseries, yeah.
By the way, too, this is offered to a friend of mine that's Eastern Shore guy. He said, they're over at 9 a.m. or the first ship wave, whichever comes first.
And that's probably true, too. And what about your question? You had a good question earlier. Well, what about a Western Shore? You know, and
I
get calls. I get calls saying, "Well, you've said there's Jubilees, but we're having one right now off the Western Shore." I'm sure they're having an Alabama port kind of area that I got the word from.
I'll be down on Dolphin Island, but somebody said, "Oh, Sullivan, you missed it this morning when y'all were going snapper fishing. We had a thing go on up the bay."
And I don't think those things. I think those are low oxygen events caused by something.
Okay. You know, not specifically
what are they caused by? Well, there's all kinds of factors that cause low oxygen, you know.
But because the tide is rising on the eastern shore of the bay.
Right.
Because I would turn around and say, okay, well, what if we have a hot day with the rain and we have a westerly wind, you know, pushing water out? But we don't have
The other thing, and I see it all the time going back and forth to Dolphin Island, so do you. In the summer, one of the species of fish that moves in and out of the bay and up into these tributaries are menhaden.
Yes.
And large, large numbers of menhaden. And they are a high oxygen demanding fish. I mean, you ever watch one in the water,
why the pogies don't last long in your live well if you put too many
exactly
in.
That's exactly correct.
Yeah.
Same reason. Well, once they get up into these shallow tributaries and you've got 1,000 of them in there, they use up all the oxygen right away. They die.
They do it to themselves, John?
And then, And then when they die, they decay.
Yes.
And
more oxygen.
There goes another oxygen problem. So
what people might be seeing on the west side is some situation like that happened. It was a low O2, but it wasn't a Jubilee.
Right. Correct.
Wow. There's so much to think about in this. Just when I thought I understood it.
Well, there's a lot of things we don't understand. And that's good. That's a good thing.
It is. Tony's saying rain showers the day before and some the day of. Water gets rougher after the sun comes up, stirs water up. And maybe that's why. Yeah, maybe that's why I have this idea. I have this idea in my head of the why we don't see them later on. All right, let's see. Are we in a unique? Yeah, we talked about. Are we a unique place for Jubilees? I've only heard of two other places in the world. It's really just two of us total.
I've only heard of the Bay in Japan and Mobile Bay as having these true Jubilees. But
it's amazing when you think about that, Dr. Dindo. The amount of shoreline. Let's think about circumnavigate here, and think about the bays and deltas and estuaries all over
the
this
world.
Globe.
Yep.
And it only happens two places.
Yeah, that is amazing. And as I said to you earlier when we were on a break, Mobile Bay is an amazing place. It is just a dynamic estuary, and I mean it provides tremendous amount of fisheries for the entire Gulf. I mean,
and if people don't understand this too, you also talked about this where we rank. Yeah, I tell people how important the Delta is, how important the Bay is.
Yep.
It is the fourth largest?
Fourth largest drainage basin by volume of water in all of North America. Think about that.
All of North America.
The fourth largest. Largest drainage basin.
Not just U.S., not just all of North America.
Largest is Mississippi. The second is the Columbia River. The third is the Yukon that comes out of British Columbia through the state of Washington. Number four, Mobile Bay. 40 billion gallons of water, give or take, enter the bay every single day. And in 3 days, that water moves offshore or out through Mississippi Sound.
Okay, somebody's riding along right now. They're on the causeway. They just crossed over the Appalachian. They crossed over the Tensaw. That water right there in 3 days, that is in the Gulf.
Exits into the Gulf. And that's called entrainment. How long does water stay in your system? The longer the water stays in the system, the greater the chance for things like pollutants that are in the water to settle out of the water column. Chesapeake Bay. Okay. Chesapeake Bay is five times the size of Mobile Bay. But for water that enters the Chesapeake Bay, it takes 28 to 32 days to get to the Atlantic Ocean. That's a long entrainment time for whatever's suspended in the water.
Something's coming out of the Potomac or whatever, coming into Chesapeake.
Correct.
It's like a month.
About a month for that water to finally move offshore. And that's why, again, why Mobile Bay is so unique. You got all that head pressure pushing that water out.
Wow. I'm going to ask you a couple questions here before we go to the break, too, on some of the critter that can't move during a low oxygen event, oyster.
Oh, what do they do?
Yeah, does that lead to oyster kills?
Nope, oyster shuts itself out. Now, an oyster can close its shell and live for about 30-some days without ever having to open its shell again. And, yeah, they can live. But in the process, they're digesting their own internal system. So
it's like the people on that Survivor show. Yeah. But the oxygen, they can
shut themselves away from from the water column. They just clam themselves up, tight as a drum.
I'll be darned. Coming right back. More with Dr. John Dindo, Dolphin Island Sea Lab, talking Jubilees and Mobile Bay and a whole lot more.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Back, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along, and great to talk to Dr. John Dindo, Dolphin Island Sea Lab. You know, the phone's here. Bruce is in Mobile. You're on with Dr. Dindo. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, how you doing? I grew up on Mobile Bay. I used to go to my aunt and uncle's house, and they do have Jubilees on the west-hand side of the bay, but I think the problem and what's stopped that from happening so much was when they put that Gilliard Island out there, because we had Jubilees all the time when I was growing up on the west hand side of the bay.
And I've heard that. I've had other people tell me that they've had Jubilees there. I'm not going to challenge that. I don't doubt that those kind of things. I'm not sure it's a true Jubilee as described from the eastern shore and the way the water moves and the way the tides move. But I don't doubt you have things that just like a Jubilee taking place there. And I don't know about Gilliard Island. I don't know if you think it interfered with the flow of the water or something.
Well, they don't have them as much anymore after they installed that there.
Yeah.
Bruce, appreciate your call. Thank you. Let's talk about, we talked about oysters in the mix here. How are we looking with oyster populations? It's something that I see as a layman, that if you could get more oysters, you would clear up more water that would give you more oysters. But there has to be, we've got to crank it, we've got to pull the start on it. How does that happen, or does it happen anymore?
Yeah, Scott did a great thing. I mean, the oysters, the natural harvest this year was the longest I've seen in probably the last 10 years.
Yeah,
it was open from maybe October all the way through February.
Oh, it made news here. We talked about it.
Yeah. There was 100 oystermen out there every single day harvesting those. And that's a result of the state planting shell back and everything. And You have to think back. We haven't had a major hurricane mm-hmm. in a long time. And those hurricanes, in our shallow water system, they tend to bury the oysters. And once they're buried, that's it.
Now, but what before, you know, let's go back 100 years or something, we had hurricanes. What was it, just they were so prolific that if you lost this bed here, another one would take over?
Well, the other thing to remember, oysters were found throughout Mobile Bay.
Yes.
From
these are the stories I love, way up the eastern shore.
We have maps at the Sea Lab that the oyster beds were mapped from the causeway all the way down, eastern shore, western shore, middle of the bay. What's an interesting thing is Radcliffe dredging. I don't know if you mm-hmm. remember Radcliffe.
Sure.
Radcliffe made a fortune dredging oysters for road beds from the upper bay. So that just shows you that.
Could we bring them back now, John, though? Could we, I mean, have things changed enough that they wouldn't stick?
Well, probably not. I mean, there's experimentation where they've seeded some shorelines up there. Remember the change now, and Dr. Stout talked to you about grass beds on the eastern shore. She did a lot of studies mm-hmm. over there on those grass beds. Jimbo better tell you about how deep the grass was off the Fairhope Pier.
Yeah.
Things that have changed are sediment rates. Not just the core. So you have to consider that it's not just in Mobile that sediment's coming from.
Thank you, Birmingham.
Yeah,
thank you, Huntsville.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And how many people now want go up Highway 225?
Mm-hmm.
When I first got here, 225, man, that was out in the wilderness.
Yeah.
There was nobody up there. These are bedroom communities all the way up 225, and a lot of them on the river, on the edge of the river. And so as these places get developed, water seeps out, even though you have laws about...
Now let's say, are we doing better with silt fence?
Even though we have those, and you've seen them around the city mm-hmm. where they blow out. I mean, mm-hmm. we got the heaviest rainfall, you know, 65-plus inches a year in Mobile. They blow out, that sediment enters the system and comes down. So a lot of those factors affect the oysters and the oyster beds.
Now, I appreciate today's discussion. I want to talk about this as we close out. 50 years with the Dauphin Island Sea Lab. How can folks get more involved, get a better education of what a gem we have here, whether they got to do it as a school trip? How do you open the doors for
Sea Lab? Absolutely. Well, first of all, you go to our website, www.disl.org. In that website, it shows every single program that the Sea Lab offers. And it offers programs from kindergarten kids to grandparents, and every age in between. And so it's a great place. We have some wonderful scientists there, knowledgeable scientists. Every year we have this open house in which you can come down to the Sea Lab and actually go into the scientist research labs and ask them questions about what do you do for research or what do you do for research? You know, and we have the gamut of scientists. We have scientists that study whales and dolphins. We have scientists that study oceanography and scientists that study plankton and algae. So it's 50 years, that place is a highlight for the state of Alabama.
It absolutely is, and its reputation is worldwide, and the people that come worldwide. Estuarium, I love that for probably an intro for folks.
Absolutely. If you want to learn what's in Mobile Bay, we take the water of Mobile Bay, we run it through a bunch of filters, we clean the water up so that you don't have the silt, mm-hmm. and then in those tanks are the animals that live in and around Mobile Bay.
This is fantastic. If y'all have never been, that's a to-do list. And that open house event, when is that?
It's in April.
Okay.
I don't have the exact date.
So it's going to be on the website?
It'll be posted on the website, absolutely.
All right, so disl.org, you can see that. And what's coming up on fundraisers? You'll have events coming up?
Yep, the Dauphin Island Sea Lab Foundation will have a May 5th fundraiser on the causeway. Great organization. They help support the Sea Lab in its total mission of science and education, and it's a great event, too. It's a really fun event.
Right. We're going to look forward to that and hopefully see you out there. You're coming back soon?
Absolutely. I'm here.
Because we got lots of stuff to talk about, from pelicans to I want to talk some deep water stuff, too, with you.
Yes, sir.
You talk about the other frontier.
Love it.
All right, Dr. John Dindo, Dolphin Island Sea Lab, our guest right here on Midday Mobile. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. I'll see y'all tomorrow. The show tomorrow will be live from the fantail of the USS Alabama as we go to the battleship for Midday Mobile and Scuttlebutt. All right, see y'all tomorrow.